especially that we find it that it's something that we can do or not do, according to what we believe. Mom and I and Rob were having a discussion over lunch yesterday about some of these issues. And obviously the biggest one that it leads to is salvation. How do we know, and especially with our family circumstances, how do we determine salvation? How do we determine how we interact with our loved ones? Because they're all in different places. And some of them are very outspoken as far as their belief system. And a lot of them adhere to things that aren't necessary, things that we would agree with as being truth. So a situation arose that something was asked about a specific do or don't that's in the Word. And in context to the circumstances, there's people around and people had different beliefs. So navigating that, I came upon something that I said, and Robin said that she didn't think that was necessarily the right answer. And in light of who was there and the circumstances, we determined that it's very difficult sometimes in mixed company, especially loved ones, to speak forthright. And so we actually discussed various ways that we could have a standardized answer so there wouldn't be division if you're talking to a group of people. And that, again, where we come to. If we look at the text, Noah, in Genesis 7, that Robin read, it's actually kind of into the story a little bit. It starts actually in Genesis 6:8, the ending of the previous parasha. The beginning of the parasha starts with the generations of Noah, his three sons, and it goes on to talk about pretty quickly the condition of the earth. And the previous parasha, the beginning of the six, kind of talks about the condition of mankind at that time, that he uses the whole world was corrupted. And I guess that's a strong word, because corruption lends itself to all sorts of things. And the ultimate reality is that Noah was the only man found righteous on the whole earth. And to me, that was astounding. I always glossed over that, as if, there's a lot more interesting things in and around that passage. But something that struck me, and especially as it concerns what we were talking about in our family, how do we confront those things that are obviously sin, wrong, and they're contrary to Torah? And we're worried about, I guess, hurting feelings and sensibilities and alienation of people. And so I guess that's the part that we really need to learn to navigate in these last days, because our stances are going to alienate a lot of people. Our belief in Yeshua and his plan for our life and the end of the age is not going to be something that a lot of people are going to gravitate towards, especially in our own families, because they have these other systems of belief. It could be pre-trib, any number of things that theology has become very subjective, and that's the issue that we're dealing with. So in context, I was going to put up a graph. It's actually more of a... it gives us a picture of what the generations of Noah and previously looked like. So in, I think it's in Genesis 4 and 5. I don't know if you can see that. That's not the one, actually, Robin. The one that has only the single one is better.
I don't know which one that would be.
Try number three. I'm not sure. No, that's not it. There was another one that I had. I can pass it around. Is actually one. It's very difficult to see though. The point I was going to make, if she can come up with, if you can see that, it's actually the bottom one, the Masoretic one is what we're looking for. The bottom one. If we look here, we can see that these are, is that the bottom one?
Go down.
Mm-hmm. Down. Up rather.
You want this one? It's the same as right that
here.
One.
No, but I want that one emphasized, the bottom one, because that's the correct one.
Well, this is the bottom one.
It's right here.
Which part you want, the bottom of it?
Yes.
Which part?
Yeah. So kind of move, can you move it over a little bit? Too far, because we want to see Adam in that. Right there. Okay, so these are the generations that are listed in chapter 5, and then on into 6 with after Noah's line. But if you need to look, all these men, and if you go through it, their wives and their other children, because these are only the children that are named in the genealogy. But each one says, and he had other children. Sons and daughters were born to him. But these are the patriarch positions. So what you have here is, you can see the overlay. Adam actually died right before Noah was born. So all these men were alive in proximity during the time that we're talking about. Here, if you read, I think it's in, I'm not sure, I'm not going to quote it, but I think it's chapter 4 or 5, it starts with, when Seth was born, men began to call on the name of the Lord again. So, previously, not so much. And from that time of his birth, down to the time where Noah's birth, they not only stopped calling on the name of the Lord, but corruption was so extensive that the whole world was corrupt. My point of this is, Adam was alive through all these people's lifetimes. So him giving instructions to these various generations about what God did and what it was like in the garden, he actually had that experience. And so as we go down to each one, they all had interaction. Enoch died early, obviously, but coming down to Methuselah here, this line right here, where it ends, that's the flood. So that was at the 600-year mark of Noah's life, and that's recorded here in I think the 5th and 6th chapter. So that's why Methuselah and Lamech died right before the flood. Methuselah's name means his death will bring, which was pointing to the fact that the flood is coming. So he was named prophetically to see what God was going to do in and through his life. And then Noah's birth, 500, and that's where we pick up our story. Noah's 500. He has his three kids, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And so at that point, we pick up our narrative here. But I wanted to show you this graph just to show that each generation had the ability to speak to the previous one about God's faithfulness and his love and his mercy. And somehow along the line, it got lost. We know with Enoch that he's mentioned that he walked with God and was no more. God took him. And we can make all kind of speculation. Maybe God knew the corruption of the earth, that Enoch was not made for this earth. And so those are just things that we insert. Happy thoughts. We're not sure what went on, actually. We know this. He followed God. And it was special to him, so he took him. So with Methuselah's birth, his name means there was a time coming to the end and that God would bring a solution to the problem. And so here's where we end up with Noah. So basically that's the idea.
Lamech 777 too.
His years were 777 on the earth, Lamech. His name means powerful. We're not sure exactly what he did with that because obviously there's an overlap there where Noah was building the ark between 500 and 600. It's not on the graph, but between Noah's 500th year and his 600th year, he was building the ark. His call was at the 500th year, and that's what's in our parashah today. So for 100 years, Lamech and Methuselah were at least around during that time. But we don't know the interaction they had with him or not with him during that particular time. So.
Well, they didn't make it on the ark.
No, they both died before the flood.
Oh, before, okay.
They both died before the flood. Methuselah died right before the flood, and Lamech, it seemed like it could have been 10 to 15 years before that. So I just thought those graphs would be interesting for us to understand that each one of those generations had the opportunity because they had the knowledge of God, but for whatever reason, they weren't shining lights in the midst of their dark world because the world became so depraved that God had to deal with all human beings and all flesh and of the animals as well. So.
Can you imagine Noah building that ark and all of the corrupt people? You know, and he was still faithful to do that all that time, building that.
Well, there's a lot. Well, 120 years is another issue because that time period goes back to the previous parasha where Hashem says to Noah that the appointed time for men is 120 years. I've done some research. Some people think that is the appointed days of man's life after the flood because he knew the flood was coming. Others believe that that was the time period that it took for Noah to actually build the ark. But there's some numerical problems if you read the scripture where he is called his 500th year and he actually got into the ark with his family on his 600th year. So that gives you 100 years rather than 120. So there may be some other issues having to do with that time period. The important thing is that he had 100 years to do this. Now, there's a lot of speculation. The rabbis talk a little bit about Noah, saying, yeah, he was a righteous man, but comparing him to Abraham. If Noah would have been alive during the time of Abraham, would he have been as righteous as Abraham was? And so they say, yeah, he was able to save him and his family, but he was not able to save anybody else through his message. So they speculate, did he really go out and was he a herald? Did he trumpet the cause of God? Did he say, there's things coming and you really, really need to change your lifestyle. You need to change from what you're doing. So that's the interesting part connected with this. 2 Peter 2 has some information. Noah's found in a few different places. He's found in Ezekiel, and it's kind of an obscure thing about naming three different men, Noah and Daniel and a couple other people, and would God telling Ezekiel basically that they three would have been saved and no one else because of the corruption. Again, it's found in Matthew 24, Luke 17, Hebrews 11, 1 Peter 3, and then 2 Peter 2 is where we're going. And I think this is important to make a parallel. Before I do that, I just wanted to go back and read this real quick, what Robin had read. No, she didn't actually read this. It's the previous chapter. It just gives the conditions of the earth. Chapter 6, verse 9. These are the generations of Noah. Noah, a righteous man, had been without blemish in his generations. Noah walked with Adonai. And Noah fathered three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And the earth was corrupt before Adonai. And the earth was filled with violence. And Adonai looked on the earth, and behold, it was corrupted, for all flesh had corrupted its way on the earth. And Elohim said to Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them, and behold, I will destroy them along with the earth. So that's the scene there, and it's difficult, I guess, to get a good picture for us, just how corrupt it was. In the previous chapter, we're talking about the issue of the Nephilim, and all the controversies about that. You know, many people believe the Nephilim were a hybrid race between the sons of women, or the women, or the daughters of men, and the angels. And so there's some controversy and a lot of conjecture about it. There's some people that don't necessarily believe that's true. And there's some other people who believe it's very true and that we're going to be revisited by the Nephilim again before the last days are over. So my own position is I think there's enough cooperation in Jude and also in Peter talking about the angels that left their abode. And I think it speaks specifically about that circumstance. And then there's things in Revelation that would actually give us an idea that the Nephilim will be quite, have a lot of activity during the last days. A lot of supernatural reality is going to be going on. So, I mean, that's my own position, and I think there's some cooperation for it. But the basic idea is there was such corruption and such violence that God said he was grieved that he made man, that every inclination of his heart, day and night, was to do evil. And so I think the parallel in 1 Peter is going to be stark as we read that. We're going to find that Peter's talking, writing probably right around, you know, late 50s of the first century. And so we've had 2,000 years of incubation of what he's talking about. So when I read it, it might be kind of interesting. It's chapter 2, and I'm going to start in verse 5 where Noah is referenced. I'll start in verse 4. It gets context. For if Elohim did not spare sinning cherubs, but deliver them to the chains of darkness, thrust down into Sheol, having been kept to judgment, and did not spare the ancient world, but preserved Noah, the eighth, a herald of righteousness, bringing a flood on a world of wicked ones. I'll just stop there real quick. I wanted to interject that part because the speculation of the rabbis isn't necessarily true. Here's some cooperation from Peter that not only did Noah build the ark, but he was also a herald of righteousness. So that herald word could be used as a proclaimer. And so he was very active from this portion. We know he was very active in what he was doing. That corruption was so pervasive that his proclaiming of coming doom and the destruction of the entire world, and he had truth. God himself spoke this to him. And so they weren't touched by his message at all. And we can obviously see the parallel here. The world is really not touched by the gospel that's being presented. And, you know, it's, whether it's a watered-down version or the lives that are proclaiming it aren't living up to the standard in which they believe that it should. So, you know, there's very realities. And for us, there was a stark little story. Tambry was telling us that Chris took them to the park last week, I guess. And Tambry was witnessing to this little girl that was her age, telling her about God. And the little girl told her that God does not exist. He's not real. And so, I mean, to
what
me,
did
that...
Say?
What did she tell you, Tambry?
And what did you tell her?
I told her that you don't know that, but I do.
Because what? Because she said, I know because he lives in my heart or something like that.
So we're having little ones now. It used to be that everybody knew some sort of reality of God and him directing the lives of the people on earth. But now we're coming to a place where it's so pervasive that agnosticism and atheists are taking control. They're the ones that they're not teaching their children anymore. This younger generation has little to no understanding of who God is, his promises, his true promises, because they've been so distorted through the years. And so for me, it was really a vivid picture of what's going on and what we're facing. And so in our own movement, being Messianic and Apostolic, that's even a more difficult reality to share because it differs starkly from a lot of things that are being taught today about grace and truth and holiness and all those things that are connected with the message of the kingdom. So, I mean, it was important that I stop there just where we understand the context that Noah was a proclaimer. He wasn't just busy with building the boat and building and constructing as God told him. But part of it was him was proclaiming truth to the people around him. And I'm pretty sure that you couldn't miss a vessel that size, especially when there's no water around. So the ridicule attached to that, we can connect the same ridicule with us believing that there's really a God who's directing our steps and has an ultimate plan, and that he's returning to set up a Garden of Eden, a returning of that. So you can see that in people's hearts and minds today, that they're so set on so many different realities, and they don't understand how God is directing everything. So I'll go on from verse 5. And covering the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah with ashes, he condemned them with an overthrow, setting an example to men intending to live unholy lives, and also delivered righteous Lot, who was tormented with the filthy conduct of the lawlessness. For that righteous one living among them day after day and seeing and hearing, his righteous soul was tormented with their lawless deeds. But Adonai knows to rescue the righteous out of temptation and to keep the unjust and to be punished at the judgment day. And especially will he punish those who follow after the filthy lusts of the flesh and have no respect for authority, self-willed and arrogant. They are and they do not tremble when they blaspheme. For cherubs being greater in strength and in power do not bring against them the condemnation of blaspheming. But these men, like the dumb beasts, which by nature are for slaughter and destruction, speak evil of the things that they did not understand, and will utterly perish in their own corruption, being about to receive the wages of unrighteousness, as they consider it a delightful thing to revel in the daytime. They are spots and blemishes among you, and sport themselves with their own pleasures, feasting along with you in idleness, having eyes full of adultery, and never ceasing from sin, seducing unsettled souls, having a heart being filled with covetousness. They are cursed children who have forsaken the straight path and have gone astray, following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness, but who was rebuked for his own transgression. The dumb donkey speaking in a man's voice held back the folly of the prophet. These are springs without water, clouds being driven in by a storm, for whom the blackness of darkness has been kept forever. For while they speak astonishing words of vanity, they seduce with obscene lusts of the flesh them who have almost abandoned these that walk in error, while promising to them freedom to themselves, though themselves being slaves of corruption. For a man is overcome by whatever it is that enslaves him. Verse 20, for if when they have escaped the pollutions of the world by the knowledge of our Master and Redeemer, Yeshua the Mashiach, they have become again entangled in the very same things and are overcome by them. Their latter end is worse than them than the beginning. I'm going to stop there. I mean, there's so much in that chapter that parallels the times of Noah. We don't have to think too far, even imagine too much, that all those things that Peter is talking about in the time where he was living have become multiplied in our days. Some of those words, you can see that that's mostly how people live today. They don't think outside their own little box. And the end of that is a difficult one, because it's not just talking about those people. He's talking about those who once were believers. And that's the difficult part.
That's the scary part.
And that kind of goes in context with Mom and I and Rob were talking about. In determining, how do we set up ourselves as judges with those who live a lifestyle and they're in our own family? And how do you navigate that? That's the part that it's really difficult, because you know that God has a standard and the church has created another standard that's apart from Torah. And it becomes subjective. And that big word being relevant is the issue of today, because it includes empty philosophy and all those things that Paul talks about to various groups of people. And so what today, I guess, is the crux of the matter is, how do we navigate in this pervasive world, being shining lights, and maintaining a life that is not full of hypocrisy. And because of the feelings and the relationships we have, how do we navigate those in the kind of love that Yeshua spoke of? So, to me, it created a very difficult position, wanting to keep the doors open to minister and to speak into the lives versus having some form of compromise in your position when they ask a specific question about something. And that, to me, is the difficult part. And I guess...
Did you figure it out?
Well, we came to a place where... I mean, this is not easy, you know, for me. I don't want compromise at all. And on the other side, when you speak the truth, and Robin's idea was the best, you know, you go to a place in the Word where it says specifically, this is what the Word says. It's not my opinion. This is the way my life has to be dictated through the Word and through what Torah says. So, you know, in the end, I guess that's the best way, and knowing that people are going to be very offended, very, very offended. And this goes into what we were talking about last week about those pastors in Houston. Offenses are going to come. And they're going to come because of the truth. The truth that we're speaking. And if it's the gospel of the kingdom, then it's supposed to bear fruit. And it presents a very narrow gate. And that's what, you know, Matthew 7 gives us. So, in our own lives and hearts, I guess... there's a line that can't be crossed and compromised, and that's in not giving the absolute truth and giving what the Word says rather than our opinions. That's what it turns into for me, that we turn to the Word and the question can be answered within the Word. So it's up to us to understand the Word and be able to navigate the Word so we can extend truth to the people who... And it was a legitimate question. I'm not going to name names because it wouldn't be fair, but it was a legitimate question. But it's a complex question because in today's life, in today's society we live, there's been a greater separation now. What our society is saying all right now has become absolutely completely against what God's Torah says now. I mean, the two aren't even close anymore. And so I guess we just woke up and found ourselves in this position. And we've been moving there by degrees. But now you wake up and say, you can be not only condemned, but put in jail for some of the things that you have to say according to the Word. Just in context, I was reading last night, thinking about what I was going to talk about. And one of the scriptures for the parashah in the apostolic scriptures is Revelation 21 and 22. And if you read through 22, would you read it, Rob? Because my Bible doesn't give it justice. In fact, it's actually better if she reads it, because the complete Jewish Bible spells it out pretty...
Which scripture?
Revelation 22, I think it's 8, right?
Just the one verse?
No, it's the connection, it's that list.
Oh, yeah. 22?
Yeah. It's not verse 8?
Huh? Oh, here. Sorry, it's 15.
15?
Well, I'll start at 14. How blessed are those who wash their robes so that they have the right to eat from the tree of life and go through the gates into the city. Outside are the homosexuals, those involved with the occult and with drugs, the sexually immoral, murderers, idol worshippers, and everyone who loves and practices falsehood.
No, she tapped it so it... It went in.
Oh, probably paused it.
No, it went in fast mode.
Oh.